Enjoy. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ready, Gary? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to episode 115 of the Mo Show podcast. Our guest today needs no introduction, but that won't stop me from giving one because he's an absolute beast in every sense of the word. He's a serial entrepreneur, chairman of VaynerX, five-time New York Times best-selling author, and one of the most influential voices in business and marketing and just voices in general today. You probably know him as Gary Vee on social media, where he's built a massive following by sharing his ideas on entrepreneurship, culture, and the future of business in a way that is so easily digestible. His seamless content has inspired millions, if not billions, around the world who are out there pursuing their passion or looking for ways to find out what their passion is. He's a visionary leader who practices what he preaches. He's also an angel investor who's gotten in early on companies like Facebook, Twitter, Venmo, and Uber. The man has a sixth sense for spotting the next big thing. Today, he sits across me in my country, Saudi Arabia, in the middle of Kaft, which is our equivalent of Midtown Manhattan. His latest book, which just got published on May 21st, if I'm not mistaken, Day Trading Attention, addresses the shifts happening in social media today and what they mean for anyone who's trying to build a brand in the digital age. If you're an entrepreneur, marketer, or just someone who's trying to make sense of the chaos that is known as the internet today, I suggest you listen closely, very closely. Absolute honor to introduce my 115th guest to the Mo Show podcast. I cannot believe I'm about to say this, Mr. Gary Vee.
Thank you so much, Mo. It's an honor to be here. I'm very focused on being the best of the 115. And so thank you for having me.
Appreciate that. Right off the bat, first time in Saudi?
Second time. I view Saudi the same way I viewed Facebook and Uber and Venmo or Charlie D'Amelio or Logan Paul or the internet in 1996. There's something intoxicating to me when it's obvious to me what's happening. And sometimes it's a little bit sooner than other people. Just like all the things I mentioned, there were many other people that knew those things would happen. And there are many people that know that Saudi is happening and will happen more. And many have known for much longer than I have. But that doesn't stop me from being overly excited when I see enormous opportunity and growth. And I'm ecstatic to be here.
Have the ripples of what we're doing here in terms of Vision 2030, the country investing in all things tech, sports, entertainment, has that reached shores of New York and where you are?
I think, as you know, and this will probably make sense to everyone who's listening, the financial and entrepreneurial and big business sector long ago, the way the world really works is popular culture. So I'm sure this will not be confusing to anyone. The Ronaldos, the Tyson Fury Usyk fights, the pop culture events. When JID is doing the concert to open the last fight, there's kids in hip hop culture that are seeing Saudi from a different lens. And that's why when I see things like JID doing the concert before the big fight, it always gives me confidence of like, oh, there's some really smart brains that are executing this. It's not just Ronaldo. It's not just a heavyweight fight. It's emerging talent. It's from the left. It's from the right, upside down. So I would say over the last 24 to 36 months, the sports pop culture has definitely hit. And I think the answer is yes.
Amazing. Have you ever asked yourself, Gary, it's a very simple question, but also a very deep one. Why is it that you do what you do?
All the time. I think about it quite a bit, actually. I think, you're being very flattering and I'm getting incredible energy from you and your team. I'm in a point in my career where people know more about me. And I think for the people that follow me closely, they know that I put my mother and my parents, my father as well, but my mother on a very big pedestal. I think children are very affected by what their parents give them affirmation for. So when you're growing up and your parents clap for you, when you get a good grade, you start to take school serious. When your parents clap for you that you're attractive, you start to take your looks as important. When they clap for you because you're good at football, you try to become a footballer. My mother clapped for me for being nice. And it affected me very heavily. I think At 48 years old, I've lived a life where for over 40 years, I put kindness and civility and warmth and generosity on a pedestal. And so it makes sense to me when I now analyze myself. I'm like, right, I am just a byproduct of the two things I got clapped for. When I was selling lemonade and baseball cards and I did well, I got clapped for. And when I was opening doors for old ladies, I got clapped for. And here I am 40 years later, and I'm a killer entrepreneur who also pushes practical positivity at a louder level than most of my contemporaries. So yes, I analyzed it a lot, and it brought me to why I spend so much time giving roses to my mother and parenting and all the things I talk about.
Would you say that she's your number one supporter / biggest fan?
I would go further than that. I would say that she built me. That one of the reasons I like accolades is I don't think I'm the one that's getting them. When you say to me, I've been following you for 10 years and I enjoy you. When you say, I can't believe I'm saying, this is literally how my brain works. When you just bestowed on me such a nice gesture, I can't believe I'm saying this. My 115th guest is Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't think I'm great when you say that. I think you're paying my mother a compliment. I'm the byproduct. I'm the product. Hence why I'm so hungry. I know that most people don't grow up with that kind of parenting. It was not just parenting, it was circumstance. I was born in the Soviet Union. I came to America, we had very little. I believe that the greatest gift on a human being is to be born in a household that does not have a lot financially, but has unlimited love. You were taught immediately that happiness is not associated with money. It's an incredible gift. Many people that grow up unhappy that don't have money think money will make them happy. Many people that have lots of money that are unhappy are very confused. So, you know, I think not only is she my biggest fan, I would actually argue my first fan was more my sister. I didn't see my mother as my fan. I saw my sister as my fan. I give my sister Liz a lot of love because she was cheering for me as a 3-year younger sister. As I see my mom as I'm pottery and she was spinning the wheel, and I'm eternally grateful for her.
Molded you.
Molded me.
One of the last things I heard you say on a podcast I was watching, you said fall in love with accountability.
Yes.
It's something that we lack. Why is that so high on your priority list?
It's the ultimate perspective for happiness. I believe that this is very, I'm glad it hit you because I think this is very confusing to people. If you believe that everything in your life is your fault, it's actually a path to happiness. If you think it's the government's fault, if you think it's your parents' fault, your boss, someone who screwed you, you feel not in control. You don't feel in control, you feel helpless. You feel helpless, you feel anxious. The only thing that gives me anxiety is health, because I don't feel in control. I can do the right things, push-ups, eat well, but I still am too educated to know sometimes life is challenging when it comes to health. It's just the way you were born. So health gives me anxiety, but everything else does not, because I'm accountable. I believe the world has become intoxicated with pointing fingers. Everybody is now actively, as a hobby, spending their time deploying judgment on the internet, at their dinner tables, on everybody but themselves. Most people, when they hear me say this, confuse it. They hear beating yourself up. If everything is your fault, you are happy. Most people that are listening right now say, I do that all the time and I'm deeply unhappy. I'm not saying beat yourself up. I'm saying give yourself grace. I love who I am. I'm very aware I make many mistakes. I'm accountable for those mistakes. Too many people that when they hear accountability think it's deploying negativity towards oneself. This is not about self-love. This is about true accountability. I genuinely believe that true accountability makes you feel empowered and allows for the thing that makes us all happy. Your ability to deploy humility and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I changed my mind. That is the anecdote, that is the potion, that is the key to a joyous life. Most people are visceral to it because they're deeply insecure.
In other words, the moment you stop making excuses for yourself, the more of a shot you'll have to be happy and successful in life.
Yeah, the second you don't deploy energy on trying to trick everybody else why you don't suck and work on getting better is the second you get better. Think about it.
Yeah.
If you put all your energy, I'm looking around because I like the guys in the background. This is how I work. If everybody's watching on film, this is what I do. If everybody here spent all their energy fixing what they know they're not good at versus trying to trick each other that they're not bad at it. Yeah. It was their boss's fault or their dad did this or you did this, Mo. The reason I screwed up the camera, the second you get away from that, you get into a very good place. You get into, I can fix this. But that requires something even higher up. The inability to live life and not valuing other people's opinion. The reason we try to trick each other is we overvalue each other's judgment on us. The reason judgment is so poisonous is the following. When you are in the business of judging everyone else, you become susceptible to judgment. It's a very important thing to understand. If you are sitting at home and you are judging everybody else, judgment on you is effective. When you are not judging everyone else, judgment on you is less effective. This is very profound, Mo, and an important perspective in life.
I think it was Naval that said, the world reflects your true feelings back at you.
Oh, he couldn't be more right. Life is a mirror. I believe that in life, all of us find what we're looking for. Let's use America and Saudi. If you want to decide that America sucks, you have so much ability to find things to justify your cause. If you want to say that America is remarkable, good news. You have unbelievable things that you can find that justify your point of view. Saudi, you want to say that Saudi's next and unstoppable? I'm here for a reason. I see that. You want to sit at home and be cynical and say, no, it won't happen? Then you can find ways to decide that. Life is about what you're looking for. The world has become incredibly cynical, incredibly no, and I choose optimism and yes. My big thing with cynicism is the following. If you look at every situation and say no, it means it's already no. By you deciding that this can't happen, it won't happen. For you, do you know how much joy I get watching people throw shade at other people only to watch that person succeed and that person that was throwing shame have to eat humble pie? That's enjoyable because I respect the person in the arena. The amount, if you sit at home and you're tweeting or throwing judgment at Mo Salah or Ronaldo or whoever you want to pick, you're sitting at home, you're not playing.
Yep.
It's very nice that you think he stinks. You are sitting on your couch, on your phone, judging world-class athletes. I think that if those world-class athletes valued all the people on Twitter saying they stink, they won't perform.
No chance.
That's what I want for humans that are listening. If you're going to worry about your friends saying you stink at entrepreneurship or accounting or being a lawyer or your parents or whoever, that will immediately create a scenario where you will not be able to achieve. Now, there's a key to this, Mo. I'll use myself as an example. The reason I'm okay with people saying negative things about me on the internet is because I equally don't hear the accolades. If I don't believe them when they say I stink, I can't believe them when they say I'm the goat.
Stay neutral.
Neutral. And this is where everyone makes a mistake. They love the flattery, which makes them susceptible to the negativity. For me, I'm humbled. I'm so appreciative. It feels tremendous. But I don't get my validation from people's accolades, which is why I'm not susceptible to people's tearing down. I just stay in my game, put my fingers in my ears, and I work. And brick by brick, steel by steel, concrete by concrete. And then life will happen. Either you build a very big building or you build a very small building. But everybody will see the building. And so that's what I spend my time on.
You're a very empathetic person, and maybe sometimes your demeanor gets people to misconstrue that you're a very empathetic person because you speak with so much, you know, animation.
New Jersey. Yes, I'm a very
aggressive
communicator, which hides oftentimes the words, even the words, let alone the intent.
But anyone who knows you, really knows you, would say Gary is the most empathetic person I know.
I believe it's the single thing that the world is missing. If you are unable to feel the other person, then you will never be able to make decisions that factor in that person's feelings. In all of our conflicts, black, white, religion, countries, men versus women, genders, Gen Z versus boomers. If you're 23 and you're Gen Z and you don't have empathy and you can't feel what your 63-year-old father went through to allow you to even have the luxury to make fun of him, well, then you're going to have a problem in understanding. And so I believe that compassion, sympathy, and empathy are incredibly important traits. I've been blessed with it. You're right. It's probably one of my most distinct personality traits. I also think it makes me a remarkable salesman. I believe the reason I've been so good at investing and selling is because I can feel the other person. So if I can feel you, well, then I'm going to be able to know what to say to you to tell you why you should consider these sneakers or this coffee or this hat. So I believe that empathy is an incredibly beautiful, selfish, and selfless tool. And I'm proud to say I feel comfortable in the way that I've balanced that superpower.
So rare in today's world. There's more of a divide than we've ever seen.
Yeah, and I think people are intellectually lazy. I think people are scared. I will say that one of the problems we have, one of the things that is very obvious to me of why I resonate is I believe that most people sell fear.
Fear-mongering.
Fear is how you control people. Fear.
Absolutely.
So I'm very proud that I sell love. I really do. You know, sometimes people think that it's too much goody-goody. I don't know. Like, I think it's important. But to your point, I'm also not a very easy read. You know, you go through your social media feed. Some of the people listening right now are listening, going into this interview, not loving me. Because maybe I curse and they don't like that. Maybe it's too much energy and they're a chill dude, you know? And I'm actually very empathetic to the people that don't like my content. I understand. What I'm proud of is as every day goes by, I think I get more pro than con. And that's what you try to do if you're trying to leave a legacy or a good reputation. You let the work speak for itself, even if you may be misunderstood up front.
Yeah.
But I'm also not willing to not be authentic. I remember early in my career, CAA represented me for speaking and they called me and they said, man, we're getting a lot of interest in you. You have it. They said, two problems. You dress too casual and you curse. If you start wearing a suit and stop cursing, you can get double your fee and we can book you five times more. They didn't even finish the sentence. And I said, men, I'm very humbled. And I know you're trying to do right by me, even though you're getting a commission. I go, here's the problem. I don't have it in me. Same with my communication style. I'm aware that I'm a little aggressive and hyper, but I don't want to conform to get some people to like me, not because I don't respect them or I don't want them to listen to me. Honestly, Mo, it's because I can't. There's a reason I was a poor student. There's a reason that I can't hang a picture on the wall. If I don't like to do something, I'm not doing it. Not because I think I'm better than, I'm genuinely not capable.
On the way over here, about an hour and a half ago, I was listening to your book on audio, 12 and a half, and I heard something that I was like, okay, I have to ask Gary on that. I pulled over. Insecurity festers without the fertilizer of patience. What a sentence, what a picture. How has your levels of patience prospered as you went through life?
Ugh. I mean, talk about something that I talk a lot about that the kids don't like. People, when I say patience, one of the most fascinating things that has happened in my life's journey is realizing people will take words and give them definitions that are not of that word. Mo, do you know that most young people that DM me that push against me for patience describe it not as patience? When they hear me talk about patience, they think I'm saying indecisiveness, non-action, or worst of all, most people misinterpret patience for complacency. The last thing I am is complacent. The last thing I am is indifferent or impatient. I think that patience is incredibly important. Insecurity is predicated on needing validation from others. No wonder so many guys are impatient to make $1 million because they want to buy a BMW and a Rolex to impress the opposite sex and their friends. When you are actually secure and self-confident, you can lean on patience to be your friend. When you lean on patience to be your friend, you achieve much greater success. Shortcuts and missteps have direct correlation to mitigating and limiting your upside. The more patience you have to pull it out, the more likely you will succeed. Most people's impatience comes from one source: insecurity. I've got to get famous now. I've got to make $1 million now. Why? They need that asset for everybody else.
If I can describe you in one word, or one of the first words that will come to my mind is hustler.
Yes.
You are a hustler. But in recent times, I've heard you talk more about mental health, calming things down. How do you balance both today?
I don't think they're in direct conflict.
They're not. Okay.
And I think I love that. I just love what you just did. This has been one of the things I've been thinking a lot about. For some reason, we've weaponized the word hustle as a negative to mental health. In my world, there's no correlation. First of all, let's break down the word hustle. Instead of weaponizing the word hustle, like many people on the extreme side of like delusion, I view the word hustle as the word hard work. As a matter of fact, maybe something you know and others here know is I've stopped using hustle and now I just use hard work. To me, it's always meant the same thing. So I believe in hard work. I really have no idea how you achieve anything without it. Not in the gym, not in self-esteem, not in complacency, not in mental health, and definitely not in business. So for me, hard work does not have any contribution to burnout or mental health issues. Why people burn out and have health issues is because they're not self-aware and because they're insecure. If you're working 14 hours a day, taking drugs, doing the wrong things, all to achieve $1 million to impress others, you will 100% of the time burn out. When you work 15 hours a day because you like it more than any other thing you could be doing those 15 hours, more than playing football, more than cooking, more than watching a movie, more than listening to Drake and Kendrick Lamar, more than anything in the world that you would rather do is work than anything else, the only thing you're guaranteeing yourself is good mental health. I think the world has this wrong. I think the word hard work has been demonized by people that don't want to put in hard work. And I believe that there are unlimited people out there who hustle, who are incredibly happy. And I personally know hundreds, if not thousands of people who are incredibly balanced in their 35 hours of work a week, who are deeply insecure, have major mental health issues. There's no correlation of the two. And I loved how you responded, because we've brought them together and we have it completely confused.
Many entrepreneurs here in Saudi and around the world are eager to make a positive impact, but maybe more often than not, they don't know how to do so. What advice do you have to up-and-coming founders who want to expand beyond their home shores, who really want to make an impact on a global level?
There's a lot there. I think the first thing is they have to look themselves in. Like I would want anyone who just resonated with that question to pause the podcast right now, go to the mirror and ask themselves, do they mean it? I think we live in a world of virtue signaling.
We do.
I think a lot of people say the right things, but it's not in their heart. So the first thing I would say is people have to be authentic. Do they really want to do that? Or do they think that's a good thing to say while they're working on what they want for themselves? And let me tell you why I said that, Mo. I don't think there's anything wrong to wait to leave a positive impact. Everyone's rushing to leave a positive impact when they haven't even had a positive impact on themselves yet. So the first thing I would say is ask yourself if it's true. If it is, I have tremendous news. You need no money, no attention, no followers to leave a positive impact. Let me explain. If you're an entrepreneur right now who wants to leave a massive positive impact, go to a retirement home or an elderly home in your neighborhood right now and donated an hour of your time to feeding or spending time with the elderly. No cost, no nothing, and you will impact an 88-year-old who's lonely, who's at the tail end of their life, who's sitting there with a lot of regrets. And in that hour, you will make an impact on one person. The best way to impact a million people is to start with one and practice. And that's what I would say to do.
Is attention our most valuable asset today?
Yes. And not only today. Attention is how religion was built. Attention is how nations were built. Attention is how sports were built. Attention is how fame is built. Attention is the singular asset of the human race.
Probably a good segue to talk about TikTokification, if I pronounced that right.
You did. TikTokification, for everybody who's listening, is the word I put on the new era of social media, where individual pieces of content find the audience, not having a lot of followers. I've spent 15 years to amass all these followers, and now I've been commoditized. Anybody behind the camera right now can post a TikTok tomorrow that will get more views than a post that I post, because the individual piece of content they made on that day was more valuable to the target audience than what I made. That is a level of meritocracy that is profound. It is fantastic. I love it. You know, even though maybe I'm someone who doesn't benefit as much from it, I love it because I'm also confident in my ability to provide value on a daily basis. So, you know, there's a lot to break down in that, but I think that attention finally being in a place where it's merit-based, not based on who someone else chose. Let's talk about it. 30 years ago, if you're on television in Saudi, in a limited media market like Saudi was 30 years ago, you were famous.
Yep.
But who decided who was going to be on TV? Another human being. Completely subjective, often political, not even politics, corporate political, and that became the person. Today, I don't know, maybe a light-eyed man named Mo could just decide to make content and the market decides they like him. You and I are the byproducts of the democracy of attention. That is the legacy that the internet will have. The current state of the internet's attention is called social media.
The whole way that it's been democratized, and we go from an area where mics were in a few hands to mics in many, I just think provides more opportunity for people to express themselves. And almost, I'll even go as far as to say, as to know the truth.
Well, yes, but I will say this. Truth is a tricky word. It allows people to start to find their own truths for what they're looking for. To your point, when you give everyone a voice, I mean, there are people, listen, as someone who's deeply optimistic, there's probably an action that a lot of people like to take that I struggle with more than conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory is so grounded in cynicism, it's the extreme version. So yes, the truth, but as you know, we could take any subject matter, any political issue, any business. I just got done doing a business meeting where the other person sees the way of marketing very different than I do. Who's right? So
subjective.
That's right. So I would say, yes, to find a truth. Yes, I believe there are truths that were hidden under the old system that will now find their way. I would also say there are lies that would have never had a chance to breathe that now are believed by many, and that will be to the detriment. The truth will be figured out at the end of the movie, not while the movie is playing.
Kids today grow up in front of screens and phones. When you were growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was outside. I was growing up in the 80s over here. I was always on my bicycle. Does it bother you that kids today spend less time outside and more time in front of a screen whenever they get a chance?
It doesn't bother me. I think it's evolution. You know, I mean, I remember great grandparents making fun of us for playing video games and watching television. That was too much screen time for them. you now are making it romantic on how much we didn't do screen time. But you and I, for all our bike riding and throwing a football, we watched plenty of television and played plenty of video games. I think it's evolution. I believe in 30 years, we will hopefully we'll be sharing a meal. We'll watch this video together and reminisce when we were young. And we will laugh at this because people are going to be living 24 hours a day in a virtual reality environment, right? So I believe what we're living through now is amateur hour. Let me give you an example of something I'm fascinated by. I have now lived long enough to be part of the entire circle of search. I grew up when you had to look up information, you had to go to the encyclopedia. I then lived my early adult life and my entire adult life in the world of Google and search. I am now sitting here with you as we are in the pre-dawn of AI. Nobody's going to go to, our grandchildren are going to look at the way we looked at Google, the way we looked at our parents going to an encyclopedia. So, you know, I think it doesn't bother me. I think that there's pros and cons, but I think that everything that we all worry about from a con standpoint is about parenting. If somebody's watching right now and they're a parent and they're upset about how much screen time their kid is having, take the screen away. You want to talk about an issue with accountability? The world's parents are not accountable enough. Every parent that comes up to me at an airport and goes, Gary, I like you, but you know what? You're wrong about social media. It's bad. I look them in the face and say, then be a parent. I'm not parenting your kid. You don't think TikTok is good for your child? Delete the app. You don't think a phone is good for them? Take the phone. When you and I were growing up, if we did something wrong, smoking, I know not in this country, in America, alcohol, watching bad television, our parents stopped us. Now all I hear from parents is complaining about technology, but not doing anything about it.
Accountability.
Parenting has lost its way. Not every parent. There are plenty of parents listening right now that are doing all the right things. But when a parent cries about the world and does nothing about it, that is called hypocrisy.
I can relate to you a lot when you said that school wasn't for you, you weren't good at it.
Yes.
I wasn't either, and it was very condescending. I didn't think I'd make anything of my life. Looking at the school system today, is it flawed? Is it broken?
It's broken for some. You and I happen to be them. You know, my biggest belief is that education is the most important thing in the world. I educate every day to the best of my ability. The way school is packaged around the world, I think is flawed for many. Clearly, you and I, it didn't work for. The thing I find fascinating is so many of the people we admire, so many of the people that create the things that change the world, school was not the vehicle for them. Now, let's not get it confused. Mark Zuckerberg is one of the great entrepreneurs of all time. He went to Harvard. School worked for him. So when I talk about school, as you know, with my content, I'm not talking to the people that are getting value from school. I'm talking to the parents who don't sleep at night because their child gets bad grades. And I ask them to have less anxiety because many children that get bad grades end up living very happy, successful lives. Maybe your son and daughter's not going to be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer like every parent in the world wanted. But I think that every parent ultimately just wants their kid to be happy.
You touched a lot on dwelling and rolling with the punches of life. How important is it to play the hand you're dealt and stop making excuses?
You know, when people hear that, I don't want them to hear that, like, hey, who cares that you had an abusive father? Stop complaining. Like, that's hard. If you had an alcoholic father who hit you, that's impossibly challenging. I'm not saying, who cares, move on with your life, you loser. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there are many people in the world who did the exercise, the therapy, the reading, the positivity in their ears, who were able to overcome adversity to live a productive life. I'm saying that if anybody in the world has ever achieved happiness and success under your circumstances, then you are capable of it. My mother lost her mother at 5.
Wow.
How much more adversity do you want? And she went on to become the greatest mother of all time. You know, so I think it's incredibly important. there's not a person listening, not a person right now behind the scenes or me and you that didn't have plenty of adversity in different ways. We all have our own adversities. I'll give you an example. I now believe one of the most adverse situations to be born into is extreme wealth. Something I would have never thought of 30 years ago. That if you told me, hey, Gary, give me a scenario where you immediately are going to worry for that person's life, I would say growing up, being born to a billionaire family that's third generation wealthy. That level of potential nepotism and judgment is profound. So when somebody grows up poor in a village with no water, it's very hard for them to be empathetic to a third generation billionaire's kid. However, until you walk in someone else's shoes, you don't know. And I can tell you some of the deeply, deeply most unhappy people I know on earth are the ones that were born with the most, because it's a very challenging upbringing.
Reminds me of a quote that says, the hard way is hard, but it's not as hard as the easy way.
Oh, I like that quote. I've not heard that often. I think now that you've said it, I might have heard it once or twice.
You took me there with your last story.
I love you for that. It's a great quote. It's true. Because everything in life has a price. It just does. And I think, I like that quote a lot.
Is suffering necessary for existence?
I think it's less about, is it necessary for existence? I wish that many of us could live life without suffering. I just think it is. You know, if we as humans are capable of loving, which we all are, it means suffering's part of the story. I mean, suffering is just a part of the journey. So I think I wish it wasn't a necessity. It's less of like, do I believe that somebody can live a perfect life? I mean, in theory, you'd like to think yes, but I think that's a little bit of delusion. There's nobody who will live a life, you know, especially if they're lucky and get to live a life to 80, 90, 100. Not only will you deal with suffering, you will deal with multiple variations of suffering. And so humans love. And if you love, that means suffering is part of the equation. And so, yeah, I think it's part of what we signed up for.
I mean, some of my biggest lessons in life, I grew from my first heartbreak. I grew from working under a toxic boss for 13 years.
Of course.
Before I started this. I grew from falling out with my best friend and cousin. And it made me a more resilient person.
No question. Adversity is the foundation of success.
Like that.
You know, it just is. And so as long as one can contextualize their suffering, let's use your cousin. I don't know the story. If you choose optimism, if you sit here today as a young man and say, that was horrible. I say, maybe. But maybe we can say, look at how many years did you have a very good relationship with your cousin? I'm asking you, how many years?
All my life.
Give me the number.
38 years.
I view you as very lucky. I was born to a very small family. Most of my family heritage was lost in the Holocaust. I don't even have a single cousin that's my age. So I hear that and I look at my children and their relationships with their cousins and I hear 38 years with a cousin as best friend. I view to choose optimism. I view you as lucky that you had 38 years of that. I'm quite back to suffering. When you have 38 years of that, when you don't have that, it hurts. And there's a lot of pain that came along with that for both of you, I'm sure.
True.
But I view it from my seat as an opportunity for you to view it as a remarkable gift that you had at all, right? There's that saying about losing love, but never having it at all, something like that. That's what you had with your cousin. You had 38 years of love, experiences, positive memories. Currently, the taste is not as good. But as you get older, my friend, only one thing will happen. The negativity will subside and the fondness of those first 38 years will grow, which is why so many people that love each other reconcile. The likelihood of you and your cousin you haven't reconciled yet. The likelihood of the two of you reconciling after 38 years of good is very high. It may take 4, 7, 12 years, and it may never happen. Sometimes people are too stubborn. Sometimes humility on both sides is lacking. Sometimes, but there's times where truly, if God was looking down, one person was 100% wrong. It's rare, but it happens once in a blue moon. And usually that's the reason there is no reconciliation. But anytime anyone has a problem with somebody in that scenario, they're a contributor. Let me be very vulnerable. I have feelings towards people I resent. It was only into my mid-40s that I realized I was a contributor. My lack of candor in not telling people that I loved what was bothering me was the enabler for them to do more of it. Is that their fault or was I a contributor to it?
Gary, can you finish the sentences? The best revenge is?
Not needing success. Let me jump in on that. I know we don't have a lot of time. Most people think the best revenge is succeeding and sticking it to them. The best revenge is indifference to the person that you're seeking revenge of. If you actually don't care to prove them wrong, that is the ultimate strength. Not proving them wrong is second, not first.
I would like to forget...
All the times the New York Jets have broken my heart.
I feel most alive when?
I'm making someone else smile.
Made me smile today many times.
Thank you, brother.
I want to be remembered for?
Giving more than I took.
If someone offered you a box containing everything you've ever lost, what would you look for first?
The ability to have grandparents. You know, my grandfather specifically, I was lucky to have my grandmother, but I didn't know either one of my grandfathers. And there's something just in me that feels like that was a missed opportunity.
And I'll close with this. What is there that is out there that you have yet to achieve, which you would like to achieve?
Before I die, I would like to positively impact all 8 billion plus people. So there are billions still left for my journey. And so that's what's left.
Inshallah, you do that. Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mo.
One of the biggest honors of my life. I know you got to run. And I really, really hope, inshallah, even though I went to school in the Boston area, I hope that the Jets win the Super Bowl one day.
Thank you, brother.